From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of August, 2020. Happy 32nd anniversary to my lovely bride, Claire Ann. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and we'll be joined to take a look at the weather forecast by Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, the director of the State of Illinois USDA Rural Development will be here to discuss the investments they have been making in the state as it relates to energy and how some of those grant funds can still be had by farmers and others in rural areas. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, nearby corn futures for the day finished the September up 3.75 at $3.44 and a quarter, December 3.58 and a half, 4 and a quarter higher, and March contract at 3.69 and a half, 3.5 cents higher. May corn 3.76 up 3.5 cents, and July futures 3 higher as well, $3.80 the settlement price. September soybeans up 17 and three quarters, $9.37 and a quarter the settlement price. November at 9.42, 17 and three quarters higher, and January beans up 17 and a quarter, $9.47 and a half the settlement price. March at 9.47 and a half as well, up 15 and a half, and May up 13 and a quarter, the settlement there at $9.48 a bushel. The bean oil futures $1.07 higher at $33.31. The bean meal at $2.94.90, up $3.40. July soft red winter wheat at $5.61 and a half, 8 and a half cents higher. The hard red up 11 cents at $4.98. Live cattle futures down $1.07 and a half in the August at $102.97 and a half. October there at $106.15, down 85 cents. Feeders for the day 50 lower at $141.97 and a half, and lean hogs at $55.72 and a half, 17 and a half cents lower for the afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to help us take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thank you so much for being with us today. Can you give us a technical picture of what's going on in Chicago?
Initially, I mean, when you look at the chart picture and everything, you've got to be real friendly. November soybeans, I guess I'll talk about November soybean or the futures this week. Last week, I talked about Central Illinois cash prices. November soybeans almost reached the 76% retracement level off of the early January high point of 982 and three quarters, and the low that we had back in April, May of around 831. So we're right up against that, almost there. I don't know this perfectly the way I got stuff drawn here on my monitor. My eyes ain't as good as they used to be, but there, it's close enough anyway. And then we kind of backed off a little bit. I think the most concerning thing that we would say on the technical picture, and this would probably also go with corn, is that we have reached some overbought technical conditions. And then some of my cyclical work has a short-term high in the making here or over the next day or two. Give or take a couple days type stuff. So I think we're at a point of consolidation at the minimum, maybe even a little bit of a setback as we go on into the end of the month, since most of the month here has been on the upside. We could see some long profit taking going into month's end. Now you go over and take a look at December corn. December corn sliced through one of its major retracement hurdles, going back to that 411 and a half high that we had earlier, or actually last October, before we started the big down move here, as we kind of slid through November, December. Then we had a little bounce there in January, but we didn't take out that 411 high. And then went down to this 320 level back, I guess it was back in the early August. We crossed through the 38% retracement level, which was 354. Corn has a tendency at times to kind of do 50% retracements before it finds resistance or kind of some technical selling. And the 50% retracement level sits in there about 365 and three quarters. And the high that we had here back in July is a little bit less than that, about 363 or 364. So it does look like we're on the verge of challenging that. But as in soybeans, all of your technical indicators are in some highly overbought technical conditions. So it would imply, like I said, in soybeans that at the minimum, we're ripe for a period of consolidation, some choppy sideways action, and or a 2 to 3 day type technical correction. And as in soybeans, I think that could come from end of the month profit taking from the long side, since we have been higher for the month. It does look like on the futures market, at least on December futures, we're going to close out the month with a monthly reversal to the upside. It's also on the cash chart. So I do think we're going to look back and look at this August low in corn as something very important that we may look at for a long time. At least I'm hopeful for that. So both markets, unless things would just totally fall apart here in the last couple of days of the month, we're going to close out the month fairly strong on a monthly chart. And it does tee up a counter-seasonal move. And that is something that I'll be watching as we move through the month of September, because as I mentioned many, many times, September is a very strong down month. 8 out of 10 years, 8.5 out of 10, you close lower during the month of September. But it seems like we've got the crop getting smaller here. The crop has kind of gotten smaller basically since August 1st. Now, whether or not it's small enough to maintain a counter-seasonal rally, that'll be something I'll be watching. But if we could get a market to go counter seasonal, it'll be very, very strong. I just kind of view everything as if you're in a canoe and you're paddling upstream on a river and you can make progress going upstream paddling a canoe, then when you go with the current, then you can really go faster. So the seasonals are going to be pushing downward here during the month of September for both corn and soybeans, mostly into the first 10 days or so of October. But if those markets can go against that downward pressure, and then when the seasonalities actually turn up anytime after mid-October, then we could really accelerate and have a nice rally maybe into the end of the year. But first things first, as I've mentioned for some time, I've kind of targeted this middle September plus or minus 30 days for an important high point and a place that farmers need to manage their risk however they want to do that, with future sales, cash sales, put options, whatever they do. Because my cyclical work does say that we're going to have a decline into the winter. We're going to have a decline into the winter as we go on into March 1st or so. And March 1st is usually a pretty heavy cash flow date for many farmers. So I think this is the rally here between, you know, like I said, September 15th plus or minus 30 days. So that goes into maybe October 15th, might even stretch into early October. But they do need to be careful and kind of watch this market on a daily basis and manage their downside risk. But in the short term here, if you got some sales to make maybe before the end of the month, The technical indicators would indicate that you're running out of time. Besides, not only by the days, we only got a couple trading days left of September, but you're also running out of time on the technical indicators. So we are ripe for at least, like I said, a minimum of a consolidation and/or a setback in
here. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. You know, USDA Rural Development announced today that it has invested some $1.1 million in 85 Illinois projects to help farmers, ag producers, and rural businesses lower energy costs in the state. USDA is providing funding through the Rural Energy for America program, otherwise known as REAP. Ryan Frieders farms near Waterman in northern Illinois. He says the Laterra Partners grain farming operation project used some of the rural development grant funds to purchase and install a 45-kilowatt solar array to help power the family farm's corn drying operation this fall and its shop.
Yes, the REAP program has awarded us a grant, which is wonderful, and it helped us make this possible with their grant and the use of our own funds as well. It made the system something that we could afford and something that will be here for a long time, making power from the sun, which we as farmers are used to doing, growing crops. We've been using the sun to grow crops for hundreds of years.
What interested you about using solar power to begin with? I understand the farmer connection, but why did you decide that this was something worthwhile?
We've always been interested in renewable fuels and our energy usage, and the technology in solar has come so far in the last few years. In our area, there have been a lot of wind turbine developments that have gone in, but we haven't opted into that program. But the solar program, it just seems like a no-brainer. You're making power every day. And like I said, the technology of the solar panels themselves and the converters has improved so much that the efficiencies are really good right now.
We're also joined today by the State Director of Rural Development for USDA, Doug Wilson. Doug, thank you for being here. This is just one of a whole series of projects that are being funded through USDA to the tune of what, about $1.1 million, I believe.
Yes, and that'll cover at this point 85 different projects. They've seen anything from, as Ryan has described, the grain operation. Hog buildings are very popular. You know, there's a lot of fans that have to move air, and solar works very well for them. But beyond the agricultural elements, we've seen more businesses come into play this year as well. We've had, you know, we've got a doctor's office. We've got, of course, I said the pork facility. But then we also have even a logging company that is going to be using solar. And so I think, as been said, the technology advancements have made this a very good tool, and it is something where we partner with a variety of folks to help make this possible for farmsteads and for businesses in rural Illinois.
Why has USDA chosen to supplement the solar side of this equation?
Well, ultimately, solar is our most popular right now. We don't dictate or mandate what the projects need to be. We do energy efficiencies as well. We can work with geothermal biomass, which would translate into anaerobic digesters, hydro, solar. A few years ago, upgrading grain dryers was very popular in this program, and so there were farms that applied for a grain dryer and gaining efficiencies of a more effective use of the power that they're using there. So it covers a wide spread of different practices, and it just comes down to the technology and outgrowth of solar is a pretty easy fit for a lot of people to work with, whether they need a rooftop or they have a side standing.
Is REAP, or the Rural Energy for America program, ongoing?
It is. Actually can take applications year-round. We go through scoring and other elements a couple times a year, but it's something that we do take applications basically any time. Actually, Illinois, if we weren't number one, I don't know who was in total applications. We had over 200 applications for this REAP program. That's a good thing and a bad thing because money is limited. And so, you know, you have to score well and work with it. But we've got really good folks here at Rural Development that have worked with this program over the years and are very helpful. And then there are folks that, you know, can help the applicants with filling out their application to the most effective way. And so it's something that's been going on long enough that it has pretty well established itself, and more people need to become aware of it. But it's been a great project for a number of farms and businesses over the last probably 15 years.
So farmers and others in rural areas that are interested maybe in applying or possibly learning more about the program can do that online, I take it, at rd.usda.gov. That's pretty easy, Rural Development. rd.usda.gov, that's the correct address?
Yes, it is, and from there they can drill down into that area. And while they're there, I'll encourage them to look at the other 40 different programs that we have. That's one thing that I thoroughly enjoy about being the director for rural development here in Illinois, is that we have a wide array of things that can help homeowners, businesses, communities, healthcare, broadband, you know, the list goes on and on. But the rural energy program has been a good one, and that's a good address that people can then find a way to reach out and find out more.
Director Wilson and Ryan Frieders, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Ryan Frieders is a family farmer near Waterman, Illinois, and Doug Wilson is the Director of Rural Development for the state of Illinois, USDA. Frieders, through the RD, Rural Development, was able to capture a grant to fund a solar panel system on his farm. On this Thursday, Mike Tenura is here. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. I think we have just a couple of items to discuss for the day. Both of them have to do with dry conditions. We'll start in the Midwest, where August has been awfully dry, although I take it some rainfall is due sooner or later. What do you see?
Well, we do have some rain on the way over the next 36 hours. We'll see a large thunderstorm cluster develop in the Dakotas later on this afternoon and tonight, and that will then sweep across Minnesota and Wisconsin. The important thing is that some rain will affect parts of northern Iowa and northern Illinois from that cluster, and we need rain sooner than later. Now, we also will see a few thunderstorms tomorrow and tomorrow night as the associated system exits and triggers a few more thunderstorms nearby in parts of Illinois and Indiana. But in the end, that's not going to be enough rain to wipe out the coverage of dryness. As we speak today, about 70% of U.S. soybean production was drier than normal over the last 2 weeks, and just about half over the last 30 days. And that's primarily in a swath from eastern Nebraska through the entire state of Iowa, through the northern half of Illinois, and then into nearby areas of Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, and even parts of southeast Minnesota. So in the end, what's going to end up happening, Todd, no matter how much rain we get over the next few days, it's going to end up being the driest August in the seven-state Corn Belt since at least 2013, and that was 7 years ago. So that means that anybody who's been paying attention to soybean markets and soybean weather in recent years has not seen this happen, because it was 7 years ago that we saw an August that was similarly dry, even though we still have some rain coming up on Monday. But that system there on Monday, while beneficial, a lot of that rain is going to actually fall in September, not in August. So we're just going to have been very dry this month.
And then when you look into September, does it get better or not?
Well, everything kind of comes down to a big system that moves through from Sunday through Tuesday. And that'll trigger thunderstorms in the Dakotas on Sunday, and then in the western Corn Belt Sunday night and Monday, and then near Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio sometime around Monday and Tuesday. So about 5 days out, let's say. But a lot of that, again, is going to fall in September. After that goes on through, there will be some storms here and there in the vicinity, but it doesn't look like a stormy pattern, just kind of more of your scattered variety types of thunderstorms as a very sharp north-south temperature gradient develops, where northern areas are pretty cool and southern areas of the United States are pretty warm. So yes, there will be some storms around in September, but we don't look for widespread and sweeping rains.
The largest proportion of the globe's wheat crop is produced in the northern hemisphere. And over this season, there has been rainfall in the growing regions across the northern hemisphere in fits and starts for wheat, especially in the Black Sea area, it seems. What's that crop weather look like for the new crop?
Well, they're just starting to plant now in Russia and Ukraine and even across the European Union. And the concern that we have is that it's been pretty dry over the last 60 to 75 days across Russia and Ukraine. And when we look at the forecast over the next 2 weeks, it's blatantly obvious that there's little to no rain coming up, and it will be much warmer than normal all the way through about September 10th. Once we get to September 10th, we can't really see much further into that, so we don't want to comment on what might happen beyond then. But between now and then, there's just not much rain in the forecast. So while this is typically ideal for planting of the wheat crop, the problem is that you'll end up with weak establishment if you don't start to get some big rains shortly thereafter. So we need to see a lot wetter weather showing up later in September and then maybe into October before we start to think about dormancy in about 8 weeks from now. So this is a potential concern for that area. And on top of that, it's also been very dry in France and Bulgaria over the last 30 to 60 days. And all the areas we just talked about also produce a lot of corn. So they've been affected by drought during some of the key parts of their growing season. And all these areas need some rain, maybe not necessarily to get the wheat in the ground, but to get it moving along. And that's kind of what we're going to be thinking about as we move forward over the next few weeks and even into October. And also keep in mind this, even though we're talking about the Northern Hemisphere and everybody's going to start planting here very shortly, the Southern Hemisphere is now about to move into the spring and maybe even into the early summer once we get out about 2 months from now. And in Argentina, it's been very, very dry. And even though we did see some decent rains over the last 2 days, we're moving back into that dry pattern. And we need to see a lot of rain come mid-September through the end of October. If that doesn't happen, then we're certainly going to have some problems in Argentina with regard to their wheat crop. In Australia, they're also in a drought, but they saw some decent rainfall about 10 to 20 days ago. But even though some rain's in the forecast, there's not a lot on the horizon. So all of these different wheat areas of the world that we've talked about all have some level of concern that we're thinking about. And that is probably the next topic to think about once we get beyond the next week or two and we stop caring so much about U.S. corn and soybean weather.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois.